Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Asked and Answered.
Questions.
With Tom Opperman and Steelers Digest editor Bob Labriola.
Well, obviously, it was never a doubt for us on this podcast, Labs. We always believed the Steelers, of course, are the seventh seed. We all foresaw about a month ago when they were going through their three-game losing streak. But seriously, kudos to this team, Mike Tomlin, the offense, the defense, for getting off the mat, getting to 10 wins, and getting into the playoffs. Labs, now you get a trip up to Buffalo as your reward. You know, Buffalo, at the beginning of the year, was one of those teams that I thought was in that elite category of the AFC. Now I'm not really sure if there is an elite category of the AFC, and I give the Steelers a bit of a puncher's chance in this one up in Buffalo. What say you?
I'm going to have to, I think certainly it's Buffalo. It's January, which right. means weather is most likely going to be a factor. I've been in Buffalo for games that, I mean, you just can't even imagine how ugly it can get, windy and cold. What does this do to the, whatever strategy each team might have going into the game? What does this do to, what strategies these teams have used throughout to get to this point, in the season, to the first round of the wild card round of the playoffs? I mean, that to me is really, really a wild card. But the thing that, you mentioned Buffalo being perceived when the season opened as one of the elite teams. Now you don't know whether they are one or not. One of the issues that the Bills have had throughout this season is with Josh Allen, who their quarterback, their best player.
Right.
He's great in a lot of areas. I mean, 67% completion, 4,300 yards, 29 touchdowns. He's 13 for 13, converting third and ones by running. But he's a turnover machine. 18 interceptions, 4 lost fumbles. The only quarterback with more interceptions and a higher interception percentage based on the NFL's, who qualifies to be ranked by the NFL in these statistics is Sam Howell from the Commanders. So, Josh Allen, he'll throw it to you. The critical thing I think for the Steelers on Sunday is when he does catch it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Buffalo, the Bills defense has 28 takeaways. That's a lot of takeaways. They're only plus 2 in turnover ratio because of their quarterback. So, Buffalo is not going to be easy, certainly. Even in that win over the Dolphins, Josh Allen threw a couple of picks. So
a couple of jaw-dropping picks. I mean, the stuff that is hard to believe a Pro Bowl-caliber quarterback would do.
Yes, he does some of that. But he will also do something spectacular. So you don't know what Josh Allen you're going to get. I would think, though, based on the fact that the way he has played throughout this season, there will be opportunities for the Steelers' defense. Now, this would be a very timely stage to get your two starting safeties back, which looks like will happen. Minkah Fitzpatrick from missing, I think, every game since the Colts game with that knee injury, and DeMonte Casey, who has missed every regular season game since that Colts game after hitting Michael Pittman and being suspended. So those two guys will be back. And, you're not going to have TJ Watt. That's a problem, no question. But who knows? I mean, the only thing is, here I am talking about it being good that the Steelers getting their safeties back and to catch the ball when Josh Allen throws it. But, we started this off by saying, You know, they could be playing on the Arctic Circle.
I was just going to go back there.
On Sunday. So, I mean, maybe they don't throw the ball as much or throw the ball down the field as much. You know, I don't know. I don't know what to predict. I got to, you know, maybe put new batteries in my Magic 8-Ball or something.
It's and, not working.
You know, see what it tells me. Yeah. It hasn't been able to process this in light of the potential weather issues. And, you know, so quick story, though. Let's get back in the Wayback Machine here for just a minute. This game, this season, regular season, reminds me a little bit of 1989. That was the season the Steelers started off 0-2 by losing to the Browns 51-0 and then going to Cincinnati and losing to the Bengals 41-10. They got their stuff together. They beat Tampa. They beat the Buccaneers in Tampa right around Christmas Eve, something like that. And it was like a Saturday game, just kind of like this situation was with the Ravens. And it was the coldest day in Tampa, you know, I don't know, in 50 years or something. That's how weird this whole season was. And the Steelers needed a bunch of things to happen Sunday and even into Monday night. And all of it happened. They get into the playoffs. All right, so now they're going to Houston to play the Oilers in the wild card round. And the Oilers were just steamrolling people, big offense, run and shoot. And I don't know, maybe they were, it seems to me they were double, Steelers were double-digit underdogs going down there. So leading up to that game, one of the medical people went into Dan Rooney's office and said, Rod Woodson isn't going to be able to play in the Houston game because he's sick. He has a flu. Dan Rooney was like, are you out of your mind? You know, well, I don't know that he said that exactly, but,
he said, thought it maybe.
Well, and he said, we're taking Woodson, and then we'll see how he feels the day of the game. We're not leaving him in Pittsburgh. You know, he's the best player on this team. So that's what happened. They took him on the trip, kept feeding him antibiotics and, you know, mom's chicken noodle soup or whatever else the magic ingredient might have been. And Woodson was okay to play. And it was Woodson in the overtime who made a spectacular play to tackle Lorenzo White, who was the running back in the run and shoot for the Oilers, force a fumble and recover the fumble that led to Gary Anderson's 50-yard field goal, and the Steelers ended up beating, upsetting the Oilers. So, you know, it's similar. The seasons are similar. The situations are similar in that the Steelers team needed a win in the finale and a bunch of help to make the playoffs, and it didn't seem likely it was going to happen, but then it did, and so they were in. Then they were significant underdogs, given no chance to win that wild card round game against the Oilers in Houston. And through a lot of clutch performances by individuals and some luck, they pulled one out. So, you know, who knows? Maybe history repeats itself.
Yeah, no doubt. Hopefully this squad can channel the 89 squad and pull off the upset in Buffalo on Sunday, move on to the divisional round. We got a lot of questions to get to today, though, on this edition of Asked and Answered, so let's get right to it. We start with Tom Brunner from Durham, North Carolina, who asks, does the NFL mandate that teams announce their starting quarterback on Friday? For a competitive advantage, why couldn't the Steelers wait until game time to announce their starting quarterback?
No, there's not a rule from the NFL that teams have to announce their starting quarterback on Friday. But Friday is a, you know, significant date in a week where a team plays on Sunday. Friday is the day that each team must publish or submit a status report, as it's called. Now, a status report has to do with all the players who missed practice that week or have been on the injury report recently or, you know, any of those kinds of guys. Even, you know, you even have to be listed if the coach gives you a day off because you're old or, you know, beat up a little bit, you know, not an injury-related kind of thing specifically. So then the status report, that's changed a little bit lately. It used to be different categories were probable, questionable, doubtful, out. Now, what the league has done recently is they've removed probable. So if you have no injury designation or no injury designation on the status report, you're not listed as anything. Okay, so all these players have to be listed. So if you're, for example, Kenny Pickett, when he was injured, he had to be listed as something on Friday. Questionable, doubtful. He was listed out a couple of times, as I remember. So that's how the NFL, I won't say mandates, but that's their rules regarding you declaring who is going to be able to play in that Sunday's game. Now, trying to keep all of that totally in secret is just not realistic. I mean, social media, their cell phones, player agents, in the case of T.J. Watt as an example, J.J. Watt, his brother, was the one who was revealing information about the kind of injury that his brother had. You're just not going to be able to keep that stuff quiet. And so teams largely don't even try because it's a futile thing. And as Mike Tomlin has explained, in the case of some of these kinds of injuries to these marquee guys, the opponent just prepares for them as if they're going to play.
Right.
Because you're in a much better situation if you prepared for Lamar Jackson and he doesn't play than you didn't prepare for Lamar Jackson and he does.
Luis Almeida from Salvador, Bahia, Brazil. Is there a league rule regarding the color of gloves players wear? Asking because a lot of people have been talking about how Joey Porter Jr. didn't have a penalty called on him in the Seahawks game.
Okay, every NFL team has a set of official colors, and players are required to wear one of those colors for things such as gloves and sleeves, you know, during the games. For the Steelers, the main team colors are black, gold, and white. So Joey Porter Jr. could just choose from any of those colors for his gloves. I believe he wore black against Seattle. Seattle wore their darker jerseys.
Blues, yeah.
So, yeah, the dark blues. Maybe that was part of him not getting any holding penalties called on him because, you know, it's harder to see black gloves on a dark blue jersey. Or, you know, maybe Joey Porter just, you know, played cleaner that day. But that's the rule for the uniform rule, what you're allowed to wear, what you're not allowed to wear.
Ken Walmsley from Bidwell, Ohio. Since Mason Rudolph became the starter this season, I have not seen an offense feed off a quarterback like that since Ben Roethlisberger in the Killer Bees. Do you think a big contract will be offered?
Okay, Mason Rudolph is a fifth-year player this season, 2023, and his salary this year was $1.08 million. Now, that number was the veteran minimum for a player with his level of experience. So, in other words, he couldn't be paid any less. So now you look at the way he's played so far, you know, and it's reasonable to believe he's increased his value by continuing to play well, helping the Steelers get into the playoffs. And now is really the time where if you're looking at, you know, is Mason Rudolph making any more money towards his impending free agency? And the answer to that would be yes. In 2019, Joe Flacco, then the quarterback of the Ravens, I mean, it was a perfect storm for him. His contract was coming up. and he was the MVP of the Super Bowl. The Ravens won the Super Bowl. Not 2019. It was before that. My mistake. But anyway, the last time the Ravens won the Super Bowl, he was the MVP of it. So, yeah, this is a big time for Mason Rudolph. If he continues to play well, I would say that, you know, he will be increasing his marketability moving forward. But, you know, I have no way of predicting that. I don't know what Mason Rudolph's intent is, you know, because free agency, people have to understand, once a player hits unrestricted free agency, the control goes away from the team and to the player. You know, the Steelers might want to retain him, but if Mason Rudolph wants a fresh start, he can go. Because, let's be honest, the only way you can keep an unrestricted free agent is with the franchise tag. And they're not going to put a franchise tag on Mason Rudolph for over $20 million a year, or whatever that number is for quarterbacks. So, you know, the whole bidding process is going to play itself out. Now, another thing that is in the Steelers' favor, if they want to keep him and Mason is thinking about staying, is if a team is permitted to start negotiating with their own players right after the season ends. You know, other teams, outside teams, you know, the first day of the new league year, I think it's March 13th, something like that. You know, and then you have maybe a 48-hour window before that. They call it the legal tampering period, where you're allowed to start negotiating with other teams' free agents. So, you know, technically, not that this doesn't often happen on the down low, other teams aren't allowed to talk to him or his agent about signing him until into March, whereas the Steelers would be able to be negotiating with him for all the time in between.
Right.
So we're gonna have to see how it shakes out. I mean, it's not possible to predict it now. And as I said, it's up to Mason Rudolph largely. We're gonna just have to see how it shakes out.
Larry Lash from Tarentum, PA. How do you feel about Chris Boswell not making the Pro Bowl? Is fan voting the only voting process that goes into determining who makes the Pro Bowl? Or do coaches, players, and other NFL officials have a hand in the process?
Okay, Pro Bowl voting is done this way. Fans get to vote, players get to vote, coaches get to vote. And that each of those groups counts one-third towards the total. And then that determines, you know, who gets, you know, gets selected to the Pro Bowl. Now, the issue with Chris Boswell is there's only one kicker on the AFC team. There's only one kicker on the NFC team. You know, quarterbacks, there's three
right
per conference. Okay, so it's very difficult to make the Pro Bowl as a kicker. Now, and when you're in the AFC, there's the Justin Tucker factor as well. You know, Justin Tucker is famous. As place kickers go, he's very well known. He has had a lot of success. And while Boswell had statistically a better year this year, you know, a lot of the voting, you know, with players, coaches, and fans, they just fill in the name that they recognize.
Right.
There's not a lot of research often that goes on into these things.
I'm assuming, especially with the kicking position. I mean, that's probably way down the list of research.
Yeah, I mean, you know, players, when they do this, a lot of times it happens in the locker room because you're not allowed to vote for your own guys.
Okay.
So, you know, and I'm not saying that this is widespread or anything, but I have known it to happen this way. Let's pretend that, the Steelers, they want their kicker to make the team. So when the Steelers vote, they wouldn't vote for Tucker.
Mm.
They'd vote for somebody that they know has no chance. Okay? So this way, you know, you're maybe increasing the odds of your guy getting elected because you're taking votes away from the presumptive favorite. You know, so that kind of stuff happens too. And so, you know, I think that you can make the case, you know, that Boswell had a better year. And it's not right that he didn't make it. But again, Justin Tucker, you know, his team is 13 and top seed in the AFC, 13 and 4. You see a lot of highlights of him banging 60-yard kicks or whatever, or attempting these and that kind of stuff. I mean, it didn't surprise me that, you know, he didn't make it. And for as good as he has been in his career here in Pittsburgh, Boswell's only made the Pro Bowl once.
That is really hard to believe.
Well, again, it's the Justin Tucker factor. Yeah.
Joe Asher from Tampa, Florida. The Steelers were flexed to play on Saturday, January 6th, instead of Sunday, January 7th, during the final week of the regular season. Do you think this was because the Steelers game involves fewer tie-breaking factors?
Okay, let me just... No games are flexed during Week 18 of the regular season. And the reason they aren't flexed is because when the schedule is announced back in May, there are no dates or times listed for any of the games in Week 18. So it's a TBD from the beginning. Okay? So what the NFL does is they wait until the Week 17 schedule is completed before deciding on which teams will play on which days and at which times. What the NFL wants, what Roger Goodell is most interested in when the league puts together its Week 18 schedule, is that there are as few games as possible where a team who may have begun the week with a chance to make the playoffs is either then in the playoffs or eliminated from the playoffs before they play, because then it renders the game meaningless. And so you don't want games in what I would refer to as marquee time slots for the networks that become meaningless.
Right.
Like you could have technically, I'm sure there have been examples or where it might look like the best game of the weekend, the best matchup, and then all of a sudden, because of some things that happen beforehand, the 8 o'clock Sunday night game is now meaningless. And say, no, you can't have that because then nobody will watch. So that's how that whole thing is figured out. And if you notice, the night game was Miami-Buffalo. And the reason that was the night game is because the winner was the AFC East champion. So there's definitely something to play for.
Right. Even though the Jags lost and the Bills clinched, yeah, they still had to win the division.
Right. Because you want the home game.
No doubt.
By winning the division. Right. And it's, you know, Miami and Buffalo, the climate difference is significant enough that, you know, playing, you know, to be the home team would be more advantageous, obviously, for Buffalo, and being in Miami would be more advantageous for the Dolphins to be in Miami. So that's what the league is trying to create with this whole TBD Week 18 thing through, May. It's almost like 6 months
right.
worth of TBD.
Mike Zakir from Mariana, Pennsylvania. Since the departure of Matt Canada, how well do you think the new offensive coordinator play calling duo are doing? It's not the norm in the NFL, but it seems to be working for now.
Okay, just to explain the offensive coordinator play calling duo. Eddie Faulkner is the interim offensive coordinator / running backs coach. Mike Sullivan remains the quarterback's coach, and he is handling the play calling. You know, to me, if you want to know how it's going, you look at the results. And under this system, the Steelers have scored 30 points twice. Those are the only times they accomplished that in 2023. They've had some nice yardage totals in some of those games. And I think recently the trend or the evolution toward, you know, the physical running game, then complemented by some timely, aggressive downfield passing, has seemed to be the formula that this team can use to win some games that they need to win. So it has been something of a success. However, I don't think that that's going to be the approach, you know, this two-pronged approach moving forward. You know, I think that there's going to be an offensive, it's going to be much more traditional in 2024. You know, an offensive coordinator kind of in charge of the things as we generally know them to be around the league.
Pat Hutchinson from Vero Beach, Florida. Watching Pat Peterson move from cornerback to safety brought back a memory from the 1990s. I seem to remember Carnell Lake, who was a great and unfortunately seemingly forgotten safety alongside Darren Perry, moved to cornerback for a season because of injury. I remember that he played very well at this new position. Can you shed some light on the situation that season?
Okay, 1995, at the top of the podcast, I was talking about 1989 and referencing that Rod Woodson was the team's best player. In 1995, he was still the team's best player. 1993, in fact, he was the defensive player of the year. So this is where we were, you know, with Woodson. And in the season opener, the Steelers played at Three Rivers Stadium against the Detroit Lions, who at that time were led by Barry Sanders. You might have heard of him.
Kind of rings a bell. He was okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The first third down of the game, the Lions won, got the opening kickoff. The first third down of the game, they throw a swing pass to Barry Sanders out in the flat. Woodson comes up to make a play. Barry Sanders makes a move. Woodson stuck his foot in the turf. One of those non-contact ACL tears. Bingo. Okay, so he's out. Now, Woodson pleaded his case with Bill Cowher, the coach at the time. Don't put me on IR. I can come back. I can come back. So for a while anyway, Bill Cowher was honoring this request. But the Steelers now are looking, you know, how do you fill this spot at cornerback? Now, another problem was that their other starting quarterback, cornerback Deion Figures, he was a former number one pick, I believe it was 1993. In that offseason, leading up to that season, he lived in Compton, California, what they call it, South Central. And he was driving near his home, and there was some random gunshots, as there were in that area in the 90s, and he got hit in the knee with a bullet. So now he's kind of out trying to come back. So the Steelers are without their two starting cornerbacks. So now they're trolling for help.
Right.
Willie Williams, sixth round pick from Western Carolina, was a guy who ended up playing a lot of football there. And then the other one, they were trying all kinds of guys. I mean, they were scouring the waiver wire, you know, picking up and what kind of cornerbacks do you think you're going to get, you know, on the waiver wire at that time of the season? And there, you know, there's no free agency, man. So, you know, everybody who was any good was on a team.
Right.
Or
no one's looking to make a trade right now because it's too early. No, everybody's still in it.
Right. Yeah. And so they're playing a whole bunch of guys. So at the bye that weekend or that year, the Steelers lost to the Bengals, and they were 3-4 at the bye. So the decision was made, because they had some extra time, to try Lake at corner. Because as a safety, they were using him, in some coverage kind of schemes. And right. Of the guys on their roster, he had the most transferable skill set to maybe help him out at corner. Okay, so the decision was made to try him. Lake said, okay, I'll do it to help the team. Dick LeBeau was the defensive coordinator who ultimately would be elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame as a cornerback for his playing career. So he became the tutor. And the move really stabilized the Steelers' secondary. The team went from 3-4 to 11-5 in the regular season. So they won, you know, they went 8-1 over their last 9 games. They went into the playoffs, won the AFC Championship game at home against, your Jim Harbaugh quarterbacked Indianapolis Colts.
Not my Jim Harbaugh. Don't put that evil on me.
Well, it always seems like the Steelers against the Harbaugh for something.
Yeah, they can't get rid of these guys.
Right. But anyway, so they won the AFC Championship game, went to Super Bowl 30 against the Dallas Cowboys. The Steelers lost that game, but, you know, and all, Woodson also played in that game a little bit as a extra defensive back against the Cowboys. Now, let me just one thing for Pat. You know, Carnell Lake is hardly forgotten, especially by the franchise, because, you know, he was he's already in the Hall of Fame. He was,
right.
Or excuse me,
Hall of Honor,
the Steelers,
yeah.
Hall of Honor as part of the class of 2021. So the Steelers family remembers Carnell Lake.
Yeah, and what an accomplishment for him to do that year, because, lads, I think it's tough to switch any position in the NFL. Corner to safety, I think, is maybe a little bit easier than safety to corner. So for him to be able to make that transition, I mean, hats off.
Yeah, and one last thing. In 1997, he did it again.
Wow.
You know, Woodson had left as an unrestricted free agent after the 1996 season. The Steelers signed Donnell Wolford from the Bears. That had very middling success. And so when they were still having issues at corner, they went back to the move that they had made 2 years earlier. It worked again. The Steelers made it to the AFC Championship game again, but in that one they lost to the Denver Broncos, who then went on to win that Super Bowl.
Steelers, Bills, 1 o'clock kickoff in Buffalo on Sunday for the right to go to Baltimore if the Steelers win the game. Hopefully the Steelers can pull off the upset, shock the world, and get to march on into the divisional round. Labs and I will be back again next week to break it down and answer your questions. If you want to get a question answered, submit it to Labs now. You'll hear it on a future episode, hopefully. For Bob Labriola, I'm Tom Opferman, and until next time, this has been Asked and Answered.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.